Intertextual Cardboard Experience.
Hello, and welcome to Intertextual Cardboard Experience. Today we have a turbo-talented 21st guest, Tyler Miles Lockett, and that was a lot of consonants in that intro. But how are you doing today, Tyler?
Howdy, howdy. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for being on the show today. We get to kind of continue a little bit of conversation about art, as you are an artist and creator of many different things. So I'm excited to kind of see that and your interest and all the different things that you've been working on lately.
Yeah, happy to share. Happy to share. Thanks for showing interest in my journey and my work and everything I'm trying to do.
Yeah. Well, we kind of in some of our earlier communication and looking at all the different things that you have done, there definitely is a ton of journey, both, you know, physically and, you know, life-wise. So that's super exciting. And we're going to cram that into like about an hour. So
buckle up, people.
Okay. Well, we'll start at the beginning or somewhere near the beginning, but what's kind of one of the first memories that you've had where you had that convergence of two of your passions in Greek mythology and art?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I think I would probably, so when I was in junior high school, like late elementary, junior high school, I was more into fantasy, like comic books and sort of like horror movies and video games. So I wasn't really into like cultural mythology as much. It was more like sci-fi fantasy stuff. But I think when I moved to New York City to go to art school at Parsons School of Design, I started hitting up the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Museum of Natural History on a very regular basis, like as much as I could, because once you go to those museums, it's like, wow, those are such treasure troves on this planet. So yeah, I think when I started kind of meandering through the Greek section of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, I started kind of getting a little bit more, it just kind of started seeping in. And then I did some sketches out there. So one sketch I did was Hades kidnapping Persephone. And I had an idea for an illustration that would be about that. But my father read and my mom read books to me about Greek mythology when I was, you know, 4 or 5, 6 years old, and some beautiful illustrated books, British books from England with these really gorgeous watercolor illustrations. So certainly from even that super young age, I was getting, you know, the influence of the Greek mythology.
Very cool. Yeah, it sounds like just kind of one of those things where everything, you know, did blend and grow together in that way. And then you've been working on that stuff. Here's a question. It's another formative one. It wasn't even one that was necessarily on my mind. But when did you know that you did want to like pursue art for your profession?
It's tough. I mean, like, I've always done art, even like from like, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old. Like, it started super young, my kind of fascination and obsession with drawing. I would draw on the floor on paper and just kind of lose myself in worlds. And I even have a bunch of my old drawings from super, super young age. So it was just something that kind of clicked with me very young. And yeah, throughout my whole life, there hasn't really been any period. Like, I was never like an obsessive artist where I just draw every day. Like, there are periods of time where I've gone weeks or months without drawing, but I've always come back to it and to some degree. And then, of course, after going to art school and everything, it became a professional thing and became a lot more sort of regimented. But the first time I knew I wanted to be, I think, wow, it's really tough to pinpoint, but I know in high school I did kind of the AP art studio class, and one of our goals was to create a 40-piece portfolio. And that was like a challenge. I mean, a good challenge. It was like, okay, let's see if we can get the best score on this portfolio. challenge, so I got very serious about that. And I remember telling some of my friends in high school, like, hey guys, I can't come out and hang out on tonight, Friday, Saturday night. I'm gonna like, so my priorities were shifting. And I ended up doing really well. I got the best score on that AP portfolio. And then it was then from there it was like, okay, let's start applying to art schools. So I would say that was when I probably got the most serious about, okay, yeah, I'm gonna go to art school and I'm gonna go, make a career out of this and maybe work in video games. But at that time, I thought I was going to be a video game artist like a film pre-production artist.
Neat. And just to kind of clarify, you did some work in video games early on in your career, correct?
I did, yeah. I worked with American McGee on a couple of his games. One was called Grimm, which was this casual kind of Brothers Grimm fairy tale game. That was a super fun game to work on. And then that led into his second project after that, which was Alice Madness Returns, which was an Alice in Wonderland horror themed game, which was a lot of fun to work on as well.
I definitely when I was kind of looking and you'd mentioned that I remember those games and definitely a little bit younger in my life when I saw those. But I think it is cool too that like both of those games are kind of taking obviously not mythology old stories but are taking established and pretty kind of like formative text for a lot of the stories that people, interact with and consume in different ways. And
For sure.
that's kind of what you're doing now too. So that's
Yeah,
neat.
that's true. Yeah. I mean, I think with some of that stuff, it's a little bit more like taking that subject matter and kind of creating a fictional modern twist on it. Whereas what I'm doing is much more like staying very true to the roots. Like I don't fictionalize anything, I don't change anything. I'm just being as authentic as possible to, and ironically, it feels fresh because most people don't do that. So, which I find so funny. Like people are like, oh wow, I didn't realize that. It's like, yeah, because we've been consuming Disney, Hercules, and all this stuff over the years, and we think we understand like what the myths are, but when you actually dig into the original source materials, that you might find some surprising content in there.
Yeah, that's awesome. You're kind of subverting the subversions that have happened for all these.
It's a weird like double back to the original and being like, oh wow, I didn't. So much of that I didn't realize was, and then of course all the there's a lot of we can get into this later, but all the there's a lot of controversial content or stuff that might be considered controversial now, like everything from the heroes that we think are heroes are actually murdering people that may not deserve to die, to sexual assault, to incest between the gods and stuff like that. So yeah, I don't shy away from any of that stuff. I mean that's the way it's written, so that's the way it gets portrayed.
Nice. Yeah, I think that we'll kind of be able to kind of get into the things that you're creating, obviously, in a bit for sure. But kind of taking another, formative question and thinking about well, the kind of the project in which I was introduced to your work and then subsequently not deep dove, but consumed a lot of your art, listened to a couple of the interviews that you had been a part of, and just looked at your social media and newsletter and website and different portfolios and whatnot, is the fact that you did art for an upcoming board game, Ikor, which is going to be releasing on Kickstarter very soon. And I saw, well, I saw the box cover. And it was super striking, but then, as more and more has been released from the different assets within it, it's just getting me more excited to see that physical product whenever I back it and then subsequently get it. But this show is primarily board game based, and I'll dive into whatever. In some of our earlier communication, you said that you weren't into board gaming too much. But I think we can think about, board games relative to kind of like your story and maybe in a different few different spots throughout the course of this conversation. But to kind of get a little bit of background on you and board games, how would you describe your history with board games? Were there any games that you enjoyed playing growing up, or is there anything that you do play now?
Yeah, so I should clarify, like, when I said I'm not a huge game board player, it's not that I don't like game boards. It's more of like my lack that I don't have a lot of time. I actually do like board games, and I do like video games, which again, I wish I could kind of take some time, some hours off, and kind of jump into that stuff. But it's just a lot of these, I like casual board games probably because of the lack of time commitment. Like, so for example, I was just playing Scrabble with my mom the other night. Like, we love to play Scrabble. Me and my dad used to play chess. So, but I've played some other stuff. Like, during COVID, I got hooked up with some people, and we were playing Stars Without Number, which is a D&D kind of sci-fi D&D game, which was pretty cool. And I had never really gotten too deep into D&D or anything, but I thought, you know what, this is, I was actually living in Colombia. Me and my dad had been traveling in Colombia when COVID hit. So, long story short, we got stuck there, and I was a little detached from everybody because the lockdowns were quite strict. And I ended up sort of looking for ways to socialize with people online, and went onto Reddit and found a board game, a group to join and stuff. So, I do like board games, and there's a lot of board games I want to try. It's just kind of a matter of time of like, because a lot of board games I find you have the entry, like there's just it takes time to learn the rules and to get into it. Anyway, so I do like board games. Sorry, what was the other question? I went off on a tangent.
No, you're good. And I wasn't saying that you didn't like board game, but it just that you mentioned that you weren't like, partaking too much. But that makes a ton of sense. And before I kind of do the follow-up question, I mean, I'm kind of right there with you. Well, not in the fact that I don't play board games, because I definitely play enough and I try to carve out my time. But I kind of like food for me sometimes, like where my eyes are bigger than my stomach, and like you said, it is a commitment. So I have all these games, and it's like, oh, like, okay, now I'm going to read a rule book, and then maybe I'll play that game in like 3 months.
Just dabble over the course of a year till you get to actually play the game. No, but I
Yes.
grew up playing board games. Like, my family, we played board games. We played all the classics and Stratego or Stratego. I don't know how to pronounce it. That was something I really thought was cool. That was like a little two-player, Battleship, all that kind of stuff I played growing up. But yeah, it's the same thing. I would put board games and video games into the same category, which is stuff I would like to play more of and have more time for, but I kind of keep it at a little bit of a arm's length distance because that's like almost the worst thing that I can do is find one that I like, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I gotta get back to work. Yeah. So I try to, like, in a weird way, keep some of that stuff at a distance, because I know if I do tend to like that stuff, and it becomes a little bit hard to pull myself away from it.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, and that's definitely a sensible approach, especially when you have so many things that are going on. But I mean, you also kind of mentioned, some of the kind of quote unquote more casual things that you do enjoy playing. And I think that, especially in the modern hobby board game space, there is such like a wide variety of types of games. So, there are ones that you can, bust out and play in, 10, 15 minutes, and that don't have a huge rules barrier entry or things like that. So it's neat. I think it's a good, obviously, board games are increasing in popularity, but I think it's also a good time to be able to hop in and see certain things that might interest you
Yeah, no, for
too.
sure. Like, that would, if you have, if maybe after, maybe you can drop me a line later and give me a few casual recommendations that I could pick up. And because I have friends that are into games as well, and we're always looking for, like, some new people that I've become friends with, or where they're not hardcore board game players, but we like more of that casual style. So I think that would be a good fit for us.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, definitely once I kind of do some post interview correspondence, I'll drop you some
Yeah,
recommendations. So
appreciate that.
Yeah, that's neat. But yeah, no, you had actually did answer all the questions initially, but I think the one kind of follow-up question that I do have is just highlighting the story of how your communication with Nick and Bite Wing
Nightwing.
Games went in order for your art to or be utilized and asked for you to create the art for this upcoming board game Ikor.
Absolutely. So yeah, Nick reached out to me, had seen my work on social media, and he said, "Hey, we're developing a couple of Greek mythology style board games. Would you be interested?" And I looked at Bitewing Games, and I really like the work they're doing. I like everything, the game, like the mechanics of the gameplay and the art that they the art different artists that, and the design and graphic design of their everything, their board game covers, all the art assets were like looking really sharp. And I was like, oh, this is like a pretty cool studio and company. So yeah, and then he walked me through like Ikor and what, and I thought, oh, this is a really cool game. Like I would actually play this game, or especially if I was like, it's a two-player game, so two-player games are not for everybody. But I thought, this is a pretty, like, the mechanics of this are pretty cool. Like I actually believe in this game. Like that's the thing too, right? Like if someone comes to you and says, hey, would you be interested in making, like, spending 2 months or a month or however long making art for this game, in your heart of hearts, you're like, I'm not really into this game. I don't like, that's a little bit of a, but so in this case, that wasn't the case at all. Like I was like, oh, this is a super cool game. Like I love the concept. I love the gameplay mechanics. The whole concept is just cool, right? Like it's monsters trying to take over Olympus, and so the gods are battling the creatures. And I've been immersed in the Greek myths for the last 2 years, so I'm familiar with all the character dynamics, and it was very easy, an easy sell, we'll put it that
Oh, no, that's fantastic. And yeah, I've talked to Nick on this podcast before, and everything that you said about Bitewing Games, I'm 100% there with, very, very cool studio. And I think, kind of like along the lines of what you were saying, Nick, when it comes to like the projects that they're talking about creating over there, really just mentions the fact that, for them to take their time because, well, does professional dentistry and then, has families, has all these other things going on in order to like want to take on, more like these projects and things that they're interested in at Bitewing Games. It has to be something that they're passionate about.
For sure.
Working with artists and designers and everything like that. And speaking of designers, the two games that are coming out are being designed by Reiner Knizia, who's one of the most, if not kind of one of the most, if not the most acclaimed board game designers ever. So that's a pretty cool thing that the first a game that you've been able to work on is one being designed by him.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that was when Nick reached out to me, and then he told me about Rainer, and I looked Rainer up and looked at the, I was like, oh wow, this is like some serious pedigree. So yeah, I'm super proud of it. I'm proud of the everything about it. I'm proud of the game itself. I'm proud of the way the art turned out. It's super cool. Yeah, so I'm actually looking forward to getting my version of it and playing with some people and getting into the gameplay and seeing. And yeah, and I mean, I don't know how deep we want to go into it, but it was a fun project to work on. Like, I tried to create a really cool color palette where, like, all of the gods and the cards are kind of this pink, gold, warm feeling. And then all the monsters and creatures and the cards and the standees are kind of this sort of desaturated blue, gray with like this bloody red color accent. So, I think it turned out pretty good. So like, even if the table's across the room and you're just looking at it from a distance, you can kind of tell which side is the good side, and kind of the darker side and the bad side or whatever. So that was all, it was all baked in from the beginning to try to, I like the idea of like just it being super graphic and being very clear about which card is whose and which side you're on.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to talking about art or graphic design or game design or the combination of all this, that's definitely not something that I'm well equipped to talk about any of those things for that matter. But yeah, no, I think everything that I've seen definitely speaks to what you're saying as well. And speaking of not being able to really talk about art and art style and things like that, but I mean, we really haven't even talked a ton about kind of how you would describe your art style. And I'm definitely going to link your work. And there's so many people that have seen your artwork anyway, and it is, as I think mentioned before, like super striking and unique and just really great. But it is kind of cool how you mentioned the standees. I don't know if there are going to be different versions, if there's going to be a Kickstarter exclusive version and more of a retail version, but it looks like at least one of the copies has these acrylic standees, and so they're clear outside of your art in the middle, and just kind of the dimensionality of the way that you create the art makes those pop in a really neat way.
Yeah, those are super cool. I didn't that I yeah I don't want to speak on that too much as far as like the which version of like the special edition or the because I'm not sure. I should probably just not even
No, that's fine. I don't know either. I'm just saying I've seen acrylic standees in one spot at least.
I'm assuming those are for the special edition, but yeah, no, those are super cool. And there was a lot of fun stuff on this. Like I even got to be involved in helping them create the basically they're like the plastic pieces which look like coins that you place on the game board when you've kind of conquered that space. And those were in 3D, and we did like I designed the one Medusa's face on. And then the other one is like a Trojan helmet sort of design. And so I got to create those designs and then see them made in 3D and sculpted out into plastic and 3D and stuff. So, that's always fun as an artist being seeing stuff that you design turned into actual physical 3D objects that that's a treat.
Yeah, that is really, I mean, I would imagine that's cool. I don't know if that will ever happen to me ever because my art is not great. It's just for me. But okay, I kind of just mentioned it too, but for people like listening, if you're able to take them on kind of an auditory journey, how would you describe your art style?
That's a great question. It's so my style is sort of graphic. High contrast, very vibrant, very colorful, dreamy. It sometimes it feels like an animated has a feel of animation to it because I think I was highly influenced by animation as a kid growing up with Disney, and then in the 90s I was really into Japanese animation like cyberpunk and stuff like that, like Akira and Ghost in the Shell. So I've always kind of been drawn to that style, and that style is kind of flat and graphic. And then even like the art, the illustration style that I like is typically people like Mary Blair, who was one of the Disney concept artists. So she would do these paintings of like Peter Pan or Cinderella or whatever, but it's very simple and graphic. So kind of like Japanese ukiyo-e woodblock prints, where everything's very flat and graphic. So the space is not, it's not like a lot of perspective, like traditional classical painting. It's more of a graphic illustration kind of flat, sort of a flattened feel. So yeah, I think that would probably be, and then of course the textures in this case, especially because I'm doing ancient stories. So from the beginning, when I was kind of concocting my style for my book project, The Greek Gods and Heroes, I was like, okay, let's make these feel ancient. So I spent a lot of time on figuring out how to bring in the texture, not only to the textured brushes into the artwork, but also like I also do a texture pass at the end where I kind of chip away at some of the image. So it feels like a mural that's been kind of weathered. over time and neglected, and kind of gives it that a little bit more of a rugged, like I said, weathered feel.
Yeah, no, I was just kind of listening and scrolling again at the same time. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, despite the fact that I don't have any of the terminology to respond in a meaningful way to that well thought out response from you, I'm just, blown away by the work that you do. And well, I'm excited to, have a game that has your physical work in it, and just kind of something that we'll talk about probably later. Towards the end, you're going to have a big physical Kickstarter yourself for a lot of the art that you're doing coming out as well. And I think that's something that everybody should be super excited for.
I hope so. Yeah, it's 2 years of full-time work. So if nobody shows any interest, I'll definitely be crying in the corner.
Okay. Well, I don't think that's going to be the case at all.
Whew. Good. Thank God.
But yeah, okay, we'll get to that. I've got a section for some work to look out for from you for sure. And you can talk about that, but I mean, 2 years, that's crazy. But one thing that kind of, ties to that idea of time and your work and just your life and your story too is the fact that you have been a digital nomad for 10 years. You mentioned travel with your father, and I heard it a little bit on a couple of the conversations interviews that you had previously. But just to kind of start it off, could you kind of explain what inspired the life choice and kind of the story behind this in general?
Yeah, of course. I'm always happy to talk about travel. It's something I'm very passionate about. So, as I mentioned, I went to art school in New York City, Parsons School of Design, graduated, stayed in New York for a few years, did some freelance stuff. And then I went, so living in New York definitely opened my eyes to multicultural everything, meeting people from different countries, eating different foods from different countries. So, that was kind of the first, milestone as far as getting curious about different world cultures. And then I did travel to Japan for a couple of weeks, my first time kind of abroad, and that kind of blew my mind. And then when I started looking for video game work, American and Ken Wong were out in Shanghai, and they basically brought me out there for a year to work on those video game projects that I mentioned. So after spending a little bit of time hitting up a few countries, I just got more and more interested in traveling, and I really enjoy traveling by myself. I've always been pretty comfortable as an artist, like spending a lot of time by myself. So putting myself out in other countries and kind of putting my headphones in and going out and exploring museums and trying new restaurants and just traveling around it's just kind of an adventure. So I just kind of got more and more addicted to it the more I did it. And then after I finished my work on the Alice Madness Returns, I just thought, I think I'm just going to work on some of my own ideas, some of my own projects, but I need to make money. And I thought, well, why don't I just teach English and travel and then work on my art stuff on the side? Like, I had some book ideas and stuff. So I went to Japan and got a job teaching English there. Did that for a few years. It was a really good experience. And then I said, this is a pretty good deal. I think I'll go back to the States and get my certification. So I came back to the States, got my CELTA, which is a Cambridge certification to teach English. And then I did that for a couple of years. And then I realized, oh, it's starting to move online. So I made that transition pretty early when that started happening, and started getting students pretty quickly. And then once I had enough hours, I was like, oh, wow, I could literally do this from anywhere in the world. I don't need to be like in a school anymore. So I moved to Mexico for a while, and then I moved to Thailand, and I just started kind of jumping around. I just kind of go into a country, and however many months they would give me on my tourist visa, I would say, well, here I am for 3 months. And then once that ends, I better book a flight to the next place that'll allow me to come in for a few months. And I've been really been doing that for, like I said, I lived in Japan for a few years. I lived in China for a year. But other than that, I've been kind of bouncing around. I did live in Mexico for about a year, bouncing around from different cities. But yeah, I've been all over Southeast Asia. And then I'd also, my dad hit the road with me for quite a while. I think for about 3 years, he was retired and was like, "Hey, I want to get out of the small town that I'm in. I'm kind of bored." I was like, "Well, let's go see the world." So he and I have been to Greece and Turkey and China, and so we're both currently living in Thailand now. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun having he and I've had some really good like m made some really good memories.
That's crazy. I mean, I think just the way you outlined the story behind it makes a lot of sense. Your interest in travel and being able to transition to doing that teaching online and just being able to, experience and then more recently with your father. I don't know. That sounds like extremely special and kind of mind-blowing too. But you said 14 countries in 10 years?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Nice. Okay,
And
so
I've got a list of like 100 more that I want to visit.
100 more.
There's so many places I want to visit. Yeah, so I'm hoping, and we can get into this later, but we're building a new studio and a brand, and the global heritage, cultural heritage and travel and me traveling is going to be a part of that brand and part of that business. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. And yeah, just kind of like you said, building you and your experience into the brand sounds like a really unique idea for sure. I kind of have a transition question into that in a second, but we'll hop to board games just for a second. I said they'll get sprinkled in throughout, but in all the aforementioned travel, what has been your exposure to board games and different cultures? Have there been places where it seems as if this type of play is, front and center in, more everyday life or anything like that? Have there been places where you're like, yeah, where I am, people play a lot of board games,
That's
or
a
it's
great question.
visible?
Yeah. So the first couple of things that come to mind are China, where I would see people playing Mahjong or like even on the streets, like in the alleys and stuff. And they have Mahjong like sort of like a almost like a community hall, almost like a like you look in and there's like all these tables where people are playing cards or mahjong and stuff. So yeah, that's clearly a part of the culture there. And then where I live in Thailand is a city called Chiang Mai. It's in the north. It's a really cool city. It's a college town. Very, I love it. It's one of my favorite places in the world. They've got a couple board game stores, and very similar to Western stores. Like they've got all the modern games that that you would imagine, and they've got a pretty healthy community, and it's kind of a mixed, like they're probably owned by Thai people, but there's certainly that some of the expats that live there like to go through and play some of those games and stuff. But as far as the traditional board games, like from those cultures, I don't think like, yeah, China would be one of the few that I can remember seeing people playing, like as I was just kind of roaming around. Like the traditional games.
Yeah, it's I mean I always wonder because I mean we'll talk about it kind of well in a second, but art and culture and history and game, I mean there's so many things that make up what I don't know. I'm not a historian, so if once I start talking about this I'm just going to sound goofier than I normally do already, but I think when it comes to either, like sports and physical play or games, like these types of things have existed and have been a part of culture for so long. And I don't Being in the States, you mentioned, board game stores. Obviously, as the hobby is kind of increasing in popularity, those are becoming more of a thing. So, like, those are things
Right.
that people do see. But there is just something in my mind that's very, neat, or I don't even know the right word to describe it, but of thinking of just kind of walking around and seeing, as you mentioned, people playing Mahjong, which I know I'm pronouncing incorrectly, or chess, or whatever it is, just kind of going to a
Yeah,
park and
for
having
sure.
groups of people. Just, I don't know. It's just it's.
Yeah, I mean that I was just thinking about that when you brought like before you said it was like living in New York City. I used to live right by Washington Square Park, like when I moved there, which is where all those guys play chess and is in Washington Square Park. So I used to walk by those guys all the time, and it always made me happy to see them out there playing chess with each other. And it's like you said, it's social. It's a very wholesome hobby. There was even a really cool chess shop down there in the village, like a few blocks away from Washington Square Park. And I ended up going in there and buying my dad a chess set. And it was a really cool one. It was like made of marble. Like the board was made of marble and all the figures were made of marble. It was just a beautiful set. I think I bought that for his birthday one year. So yeah, I've got some good memories of the New York City and the little chess scene down there.
Yeah, that is super sweet. And I think you hit on the word that I was trying to struggling to come up with in wholesome. Yeah, there is definitely kind of wholesome when you think about that scene, and that's neat. Okay, my final kind of like bridge question from your work and being a digital nomad into the upcoming project. But I'm going to ask you to synthesize an absurd amount of life experience into a response that's significantly shorter than those 10 or so years of travel. But
No worries.
what's a takeaway from that experience overall that you feel links to the process of creation?
Wow. So you mean the 10 years of travel and how it links to the process of creation? Okay. That's an interesting question. Well, whenever someone asks me about about travel and like what have you learned from travel, the first thing that usually pops into my mind is like humility. And part of that's because I've traveled so much in Asia, and humility is a part of the Asian culture, whereas it's not as much of a part of the Western culture. So I think that's something that I find very attractive. And so whenever I meet someone who's like humble or has humility, like I feel like it's a really beautiful trait. And then in regards to creation, I think that I try to be humble and have humility about the work that I create, meaning that I don't think I'll ever be a master. Like, I'm always trying to get better. I'm always trying to improve. So someone might look at this work and say, "Oh man, that's that's top tier, top." But to me, I don't feel that way. I feel like I'm just on a journey trying to get better and better. It's like a chess player. Like, you'll never master the game of chess. You're always a student. No matter how many people you can beat or whatever the success you achieve or whatever. So I think that, yeah, just trying to stay in the student mindset. And just be like, okay, this was I reached a maybe you can reach a milestone, but there's always a new milestone to look forward to. So yeah, I think maybe that's an Asian more of a from the exposure to Asian culture. Yeah, I like that. I like that we're all just students. And it's true too, because like my mom just got her art certificate from the Glassell School of Art here in Houston. And she's 71, and she just got her, basically about kind of the equivalent of like a bachelor's degree in fine art. And my dad's constantly learning new stuff, and like, he's kind of a philosopher and a poet. So he's like this, like right now he's studying Hamlet, and he's like telling me about the plot and telling me about He's even like memorizing some of the monologues and soliloquies and stuff. So it's like to see my parents that are, they're literally students. I mean, they're behaving like students. They're just like jumping into new topics. So long, that's my long answer for that question. But yeah, humility and remaining a student.
I think that's absolutely fantastic. I mean, all parts of that answer, and yeah, I think that's something that everybody should, aspire to do. Just kind of having that eagerness of, the kind of especially the young student, the person who wants to be there and learning and soaking up as much as possible, and never kind of giving up on that drive and passion. I think you kind of have to, or else things get boring. But there's no reason for things to get boring because there is so much to learn and do. So, that's super
100%.
special.
Yeah, and as we move into this new phase where we're trying, like we can get into it, but like I've got a couple business partners and we're building a new studio. Like there's going to be a lot of opportunities to go into mediums and technologies and things that I've never exposed myself to. So coming into it with the like you said, with the passion and the curiosity and the right attitude is everything. It's like kind of that fearlessness, like, okay, well, we're probably gonna make some mistakes, but let's not let that fear of making a mistake guide the approach or the attitude. Let's just dive into it and we'll figure it out. Yeah. So there's a part of that's kind of like ignorance and confidence in equal measures. It's like we don't know what we don't know, so we can just not be too scared.
And kind of just doing, I mean, yeah, you're gonna learn by doing no matter what, so
Exactly. Right.
kind of meet those challenges head
Yeah.
on.
Right.
But that is a perfect transition, and that's kind of where we're at. So you mentioned it a few times, but you've been learning, creating, traveling and doing work in different fields for a long time now, and it does seem as if this upcoming project that you've mentioned a couple times in Locket Studio is kind of a culmination of all of this, obviously. But to start off the conversation, then, can you describe the vision behind Locket Studio? And what can people expect to experience with it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Locket Studio is a creative edutainment studio, and it's myself, Sako, and Dana, a couple very creative and brilliant entrepreneurs that I've gotten sort of teamed up with in Chiang Mai. And we're basically trying to create a creative studio that is centered on art, technology, education, and cultural heritage or world culture. So essentially it's trying to use the art and technology to educate people and expose people to world cultures, world literature, and in a way that's very dynamic and interactive and immersive. So the first book that will be coming out in this Kickstarter that will happen probably in August, September, will be The Greek Gods and Heroes, which is the Greek mythology book that I've been working on for a couple years. But that was something I was kind of working on myself. And then when I teamed up with Sako and Dana, it was like, Sako is a world-class web designer and he's a very, very creative and super like just full of ideas. And so he and I have, and Dana as well, they're very sort of idea people. So we get together and we've sort of come up with the way to bridge technology. So we're building an interactive website with the Greek gods and heroes where you can click on the characters and hear them speak from a first person perspective about who they are. So we're trying to create a, like I say, an immersive experience where you can be exposed to any kind of world cultural literature and world culture. And it's something that is not just like reading a textbook in class where you have to, it's just fully immersive, and dynamic. So that's kind of the goal. Yeah.
Oh, that seems really fantastic. So you mentioned the book. That was something that you had kind of been working on, and you see how that's tying into this now even bigger vision. But what are all the types of media that you all plan on incorporating into the studio?
Yeah, great question. So for now, we're focusing on the website, and that will be available to everyone, but there'll also be a kind of a premium membership where you can get access to behind the scenes, my sketches and my work in progress art. You'll get interviews, you'll get free art that you can download for your phone background or your desktop background. So we've got a bunch of goodies. But like I said, we're really playing with the technology of what's capable. Socko is pushing the Webflow and the member stack technology kind of to the limits to see. All the art will be kind of parallax 3D. So as you move the mouse around, you can like the layers will be moving as well. So we're really trying to push. I mean, I'm really proud of it, and I think it's going to kind of blow people's minds. It's certainly blowing my mind as we build it. Like, wow, I didn't know this was possible with a website. This is incredible. But down the line, everything from animation to we might want to build an app that, you can download and experience. Like I say, the format for the way we're presenting this is basically a world map, and then you can click into regions or continents and then get into different kind of cultures that way. And it's just the beginning, so it's going to take us a while to populate the map, but it's certainly a worthy journey, and we're excited about it. But yeah, it could be AR down the line. It could be animation, some series. There's it's really the possibilities are pretty endless, but we do want to stay true to the cultural heritage, the authenticity of the root, the literature, and of course my art style, and kind of building on that and scaling and expanding on that.
Wow, that seems like a quite the endeavor that you have coming up for you with having to populate that map. So what's kind of, I mean, obviously, you've done or your book, which is, as you mentioned, going to be coming to Kickstarter 2, and a lot of your work has been focused in the Greek mythology. So I guess what's kind of like the next big project, or what's the next way in which you can work to populate a lot of that map? Or is it going to be a particular region? Is it going to be a particular piece of literature? Or I guess kind of what's going to be the approach for you in kind of in this population, so to
Yeah.
say?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. It's an important question, and so the idea is that the next book after Greek Gods and Heroes would be something called Universal Truths of World Literature. And we would choose 100 countries from the different continents, different regions. And we would do 10 to 12, or depending on the region, pick literary works from those countries and do one image for each literary work, and basically have some text that explains who wrote it, when it was written, what is it about, why is it worth your time. But even more importantly, other than those kind of Wikipedia cliff note type introduction information, is the universal truth, right? So like, what is this work telling us about being a human? Is this work about how to face fear? Is this about how to deal with the death of someone? Is this about how to, let love guide you or something, So I truly believe that as a world traveler, right? Like, I mean, it may sound cliche, but that we are it, there's one race, it's the human race. We're all, dealing with the same, more or less, emotions and experiences of trying to navigate being alive. Certainly, we've got people in regions that are dealing with a lot harsher, but I think the idea is that by exposing ourselves to the way that different cultures' literature has tried to explain the human experience, there's a lot to learn from that. So it's everything from, how is this relevant to me now, to, oh, I didn't know this region of the world had such elegant storytelling. Like, so it's kind of bridging cultures, it's exposing people to cultures, it's hopefully unifying, erasing some borders in certain cases possibly. So that, an ambitious goal, but even for me, like, there's a lot of literature and stuff that I have no idea about. So it's a really fun a project for me to approach and say, okay, I'm going to go learn about Oceania, or I'm going to go learn about, Nigerian folk tales or something, like something I'm pretty ignorant about. So it's really an exciting thing for me to, and I get to travel. I get to, hopefully, I get to go to some of these places and get my boots on the ground and like speak with the locals and talk and go to the library and kind of learn a little bit, get a little bit of a firsthand experience. So that's kind of the dream and the goal and the vision for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned that you already have, well, kind of 100 countries on that list and 100 countries for you to travel to, so you got to get working.
That's right. I know. I need to start reaching out to the airlines and see how am I possibly going to afford anything approaching that.
Oh, no, I don't know. I've got a lot of thoughts and a lot of just yeah, that I mean just a lot of things that are swirling now in my head, and I think that's fantastic. And I think, I mean, I'm a definitely an expert in nothing, but I think the medium in which I've critically engaged the most is literature, and that's still like a pretty small amount. But I think an interesting thing that you mentioned and that this project is definitely going to hit at is, stories from around the world and stories from around the world in different time periods. And it is, interesting. Obviously today, the world and technology has increased, so much where you can't even think of, life without it. But, whether the story has somebody and that person is, on their smartphone, or it's a TV show that incorporates, text messaging and apps in its, graphic design and interface and the things that you see on screen, all like whether it's that story from 2024 or if it's a story from, 1,000 years ago, those universal truths that you mentioned, I think they all have this through line, or at least the good ones do, where
Yeah, for sure. The ones that are
it
worth kind of retelling, right?
Yeah, it all, even if you can't like relate to the specifics, like the heart and the core remain the same.
100%.
Okay, well, that oh okay I here's
Quick
here's the
question. Quick question for you before we move on,
oh
Ryan. You
yeah
said you said you're into literature. So do you have a favorite writer or work that kind of inspires you that you've kind of reread or kind of has stayed with you that you kind of come back to?
That's a really good question. So I when it comes to literature, I typically don't revisit a particular work a ton. But oh, this is tough. I think the author in which I've spent the most time reading, and I am by no means, like I said, I'm by no means an expert in anything, but I've only read a few of his books and a few short stories, so he's got more out there and they're on my to read list, but I need to always give my brain a little bit of pause because they're pretty dense and difficult texts would be it would probably be Faulkner, William
Okay.
Faulkner. So
Interesting. Gotcha. Yeah, the
yeah.
Sound and the Fury.
Yeah, The Sound and the Fury. So yeah, that's a funny one because that's kind of what actually did spark my interest in him, because I was in a class that at this point, well, it's funny, I wound up teaching English for 8 years or whatever, but at the point in time when I was taking this class, it was a 20th century American literature class, if I'm not mistaken, that was the name of it. And this was a class that was geared towards people that were going to become English teachers, and at that point I was doing theater work, so it was just kind of a more of a gen ed for me. But the teacher had this really cool kind of project or activity where we had to do a student-led lesson, and I kind of randomly was assigned the first 100 pages of The Sound and the Fury, which are by far the most confusing pages of that novel, because I don't know if anybody's familiar. It's just like a whole bunch of different storylines. It was one of the first. Well, I don't know. I don't want to say one of the first because that's probably a complete oversimplification. But it was an earlier example of Faulkner or an author trying to tell a story from the point of view from somebody that had, kind of like a mental difference.
Stream of
So,
consciousness, right?
yeah. So it was a
Yeah,
particular sibling in. It's been a minute since I've read that book. I think the Compson family, where his point of view just kind of would bounce between all these different storylines linked to like kind of what was going on around him. And so I was just tasked with like trying to teach this to a group of like collegiate students, but it went super well. My professor was really impressed, and I think
nice.
it was like that experience of trying to teach, kind of like you said. I think there is this benefit of trying to teach things that makes you learn it in a different way that really sparked my passion for Faulkner's work, and then also just some of the things that I try to do in teaching after that as well. So.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah, that seems like an author that you would never really get to, like, you could just keep going back, like Shakespeare. Like you read it every 5 years and it's like reading a different author. It's like, oh my God, I read this, but I don't remember any of this, or I didn't take it this way that last time or whatever.
Yeah, no, and yeah, that's, I mean, I took a Shakespeare class as well, and that was fantastic. I loved it. And I think of, well, a funny link too. If I'm not mistaken, the title, The Sound and the Fury, comes from a Shakespearean line. And also, if
Oh
I'm not
yeah, that's
mistaken,
right.
I think it's
It's
Hamlet. I know.
Hamlet. Yeah, it is Hamlet. Yeah, that's right.
So that's a fun link
We've
back
come
to
full
your,
circle.
I know, to your dad's study, The Sound and the
Yeah.
Fury. So it does all come together. But yeah, no, there's so much more that I need to keep reading, and that's going to be a part of my learning and journey through this podcast and life too.
Yeah, absolutely. Always good to meet people with passions and hobbies that they're passionate about, things they're pursuing, growing, learning. Yeah, it's a good life, when you I've always felt really blessed that I had a hobby or a passion, a creative outlet, something that I could pursue that gave me some sort of internal satisfaction and not having to necessarily get it from external sources as much as some people might, that's really a blessing.
Yeah, it's I mean it's definitely like you said, that blessing. It's I think kind of overwhelming at times, but in like the best ways possible.
Yeah, that's true. It's not always like a dream fantasy scenario. There's some struggle that comes along with. Sometimes it can feel like a curse a little bit, but like not for me, it's definitely never felt like a curse, but I think it's weird, right? Because it's like I've always wanted to be really like push my art and my craft to a very high level. And it's like you got to sacrifice stuff when you're obsessed with like improving a craft. I don't care what it is. Like you can't just do that 1 hour a week. So when you like even going back to high school, like, hey guys, I can't hang out tonight. I'm going to go home and do art. It's like that's your social life is going to suffer if you've got it something you're obsessed with that you're trying to be great at. That's just one example where, but you go hang out all the time and have this amazing social life. Maybe you're sacrificing the craft a little bit, right? So there's always a sacrifice. But yeah, I don't know if you feel that way, but I just try to find the best balance I can where I'm not neglecting any of those aspects too much.
Yeah, I love that idea that you brought up of balance too, and that's, I think, ultimately, what I want to strive for in all things. I mean, I think
Totally.
that's the goal, is just balance.
Yep, that's kind of the goal of life for me right now, is just finding a balance that makes the most sense.
Well, speaking of balance, well, you, I mean, Here, let's put it this way. I've got a section. It's for this at this point in time, I'm going to like put a strike through on it, because I know that you have some things, well, a lot of things that you need to do, but we'll kind of skip to like the very final wrap-up thoughts. I just have two quick questions for you, but I think going back to the Locket Studio, is there a launch date on that? Like kind of a target goal? Or I don't know if you want to put that out in the universe and
Not yet. I mean, we're I don't we don't have a hard launch date, but we're gonna start sharing it with beta testers in the next couple of weeks. And then once we get kind of the bugs worked out, we'll probably just launch it to everybody and say, you know, come join. But I don't know when that will be. I don't want to give anyone a specific date, but I can say that it will definitely be done before July.
Oh, okay. That's awesome.
So, I mean, or I may maybe even at the latest August, but it's got to be done by then. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then that neat, yeah, kind of will coincide with the launch of your Kickstarter project then a bit
Right,
too.
right.
Awesome. Well, like I said, for the sake of your balance, I'll kind of chunk out this one section, but perhaps in the future once Locket Studio releases, once your book is out, once all these things are in existence and I can, consume them more, maybe there's going to be a good follow-up topic, because I've got like a whole slew of new questions based on what we've talked about as well. But
Well, let's do another one. And you know, 4 or 5 months after the book comes out and the website launches and da 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 da. How about
perfect.
that?
That sounds like you have a deal with me.
And then and you won't even recognize my voice. I'll be like, "Hey, Ryan, what's up? I've aged 40 years in the last 4 months."
I've been to 50 of the 100 countries.
Yeah, we're going to be using an AI narrator today for me because it sounds like how I used to sound.
Oh, that is great. Okay, but I will get you to the wrap-up question so you can get to work on all of those things. I will not, I won't take that away from the world. I won't rip you so far that you can't get those things done. But the penultimate question that I have is kind of like a text of that's been stuck on your mind. So something that you have been engaging with, like whether you're reading, listening, playing, kind of any text that has been on your mind as of late.
Well, I'm currently reading the Earthsea novels, which I've never read as a when I was younger, and I think they're really good. By Ursula K. Le Guin, I think. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. But yeah, the Ursi novels, A Wizard of Ursi, and then that second one's The Tombs of Atuan, and then I'm reading the third one now is The Farthest Shore. They're very, very cool. Like, I guess people say like they're categorized as young adult, but they don't feel like young adult to me. I'm pretty sure I read that she was like into Carl Jung and this the shadow and the this you know like this idea that we all have the subcon the shadow in our subconscious, and if we don't deal with it, it can run amok in our lives, right? Like we're doing things self-sabotaging or having problems in our lives because of we've got some issues with the dark side of our subconscious and stuff. So, anyways, so she's not just like a typical writer. Like she's definitely like writing about deeper stuff, but through the prism of this fantasy world of the wizards. And but man, she's also writes like an archaeologist and an anthropologist. I mean, the way she like, so I'm reading this book now, the third one, it's called The Farthest Shore, and it's like the way these characters come into these different cultures and the way she explains them, it's very authoritative and very creative, and I'm like, wow, she's definitely been doing her homework, and sounds like someone that knows her stuff. And I also notice a lot of Eastern, like maybe Buddhism or Zen or Taoism and stuff, and kind of the way she's writing the wizard, and kind of it's very like kind of philosophical, and it's sublime. Some of the stuff she in her prose is really well is really impressive as well. Like I don't think. We've got some noise. Hang on one second.
All right, you're good.
Sorry, my mom's dog is his shadow, his subconscious shadow got the better of him. The fear is the mind killer. Anyways, long story short, I'm a big fan of her writing, her prose. I've been highlighting some of her passages, which I don't typically do a lot of unless it's I'm reading somebody that's. But yeah, so that's what I'm reading right now, and it's definitely left an impression. So if no one out there is, the first book was a little slow. Maybe I had high expectations. I didn't dislike it, but the second and third ones, I've kind of grabbed me, and so now I'm kind of excited about reading all of the rest of the series.
Yeah, I definitely an author that I've heard of, but I haven't heard that name in a minute. I don't know.
I think she wrote. I think those books are from the 60s or 70s. They're not recent. Mm-hmm. But she's like very well respected. I think she won a bunch of awards for her writing over the years and stuff.
Yeah. No, I'm on doing some very intense research on Google. But yeah, no, I always say that I have quite the to read list, but I'll definitely add these books as well. They sound really great. And like you mentioned, it is interesting how some of these books or how certain books kind of do get that young adult tag, and how some of these, you know, kind of quote unquote young adult novels do not feel that way. But on the other hand of that, it is nice when when books and stories can appeal to like such a large range of people, and hopefully kind of get the younger readers into some of these deeper places too.
Yeah. I mean, she's, you know, every writer has their own style. She's more, I would say, a little bit more minimalistic, but that, to me, that doesn't take away from the elegance. I mean, in some ways, the simplicity is actually harder to pull off, I think, because it's like, you know, the more you edit something down, you get to the heart of it. And she seems like that type of author that's figured out how to get to the heart of stuff. So it's kind of almost a little bit of a Japanese thing in a way, where it's like minimalism, kind of simplifying, taking things away. Like, I appreciate that style.
Yeah, maybe in our next episode, I'll have a book in my read list, and we can add that to the topic of conversation as well.
Yeah, I mean, no pressure. I mean, it's so hard recommending books for people. It's like recommending music. It's like people are just have their tastes, but you know, when you talk about people like Lord of the Rings or, you know, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, like these things that are kind of considered classics in the sci-fi fantasy genres. And then you hear a lot of stuff like in the middle where you try to read it and I'm like, huh, this is what everyone's like raving about. Like, I don't really get it, but I feel like she's one of the few people that I've come across where I'm like, okay, I think she kind of deserves, and she's won Hugo Awards and Nebula Awards and all kinds of stuff. So she's certainly, she got her flowers when she was alive, and deservedly so. But as I like, I'll go on Reddit and look for like new fantasy or I like historical fiction as well. And I try to get into some of these books, but it's like, it's also like TV series and movies like this, like, oh, this is getting rave reviews. And you watch it and you go, huh, I don't get it. I really don't get it, but okay. So anyways,
I have such like a wide taste array. I don't dislike too much.
Okay.
So even
do you read fantasy? Do you read that type of genre type stuff?
I'm definitely,
are you more
getting
into like literature, like with a capital L, Faulkner?
Probably more of the latter, but I'm definitely starting to be a little bit more omnivorous. Like I want to like consume more, and I don't want to be limiting. So,
and then there's that's a weird gray area too between like the genre stuff and literature, right? Because it's, mm-hmm, like, okay, well, this is like hip, this is considered fantasy or sci-fi, but it's such it's written so well that we can like upgrade it into the literature category or whatever. So yeah, I would put Ursula K. Le Guin kind of in that, more in that, like she's doing something with, she's got levels to her work, I'll put it that way. So yeah, I was impressed with her.
All right. Well, I'm definitely excited. So, yeah, I've got a few books. And a lot of people recommend books that I talk to, so I have a lot of books that I need to read, but if I kind of cycle it in there, it'll definitely happen.
Yeah, and even if we don't talk like for a while, just drop me a message like, "Hey, I read that first book and here's what I think. It's garbage. Why did you recommend it?" No.
No, I think like for me, end of the day, even if something isn't for me, there's a very, very rare kind of moment where I don't see the value of it at the
Yeah, that
very
makes
least.
sense. That makes sense. That's good. Yeah.
Okay, well, we've talked about a whole bunch of different things, and the thing that I kind of want to leave listeners on is just things to look out for from you. And we've chatted about eCore, we've talked about Locket Studio, we've talked about your book. Just so we can get, does it have a particular title to it for people that will be looking out for that?
The book will be called Locket Studio: Greek Gods and Heroes.
Perfect. So that doesn't sound like you're working on too much right now, but
The
is there?
website is taking up a lot of time and
Oh,
energy. The
I was
web's
being
yeah.
very facetious.
Oh, okay, good.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. Yeah.
No, I
Yeah,
was
I've
just.
got my hands full, that's for sure. And it's really two or three people. It's a pretty small little startup, and we've got a pretty ambitious vision. So, but it's cool to see like what a few people is actually capable of doing. It's kind of amazing, actually. It's like when you see some of these indie video game makers, like how many people made this game? Like three. You're like, what? And you're like, dang, that's amazing. It's just so the tools out there now are they're getting more and more, easier for people to do multiple things that they couldn't have done like in the past or whatever. So like even on our website, we're going to have AI narration, but it doesn't sound like AI because the AI narration now is at the point where it sounds really natural. So we're just kind of, that's part of our brand, is that we want to like get into technology and push it in ways that and explore it and see what we can do with it. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. No, that joke was me just trying to say that there's like a bunch of things that you're working on, and three of the big ones to look out for would be the book, the studio, and then the game. But is there, I mean, obviously, you do kind of a lot of work in general. Is there anything else specifically that you want to point people towards from you
No,
to
not really. I mean, I would just have, if anyone's interested, just have them come to my link tree with which will have everything from the website to the Kickstarter book on Backerkit to the prints that can be purchased on Etsy and we're building our own e-commerce site as well. So in the future, you'll be able to buy that stuff through the website. So yeah, I would just Well, I'll have everything on my link tree. So yeah, the website and the Kickstarter book, those are the main things that I would point people towards. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. And again, just to kind of put the number out there, how many illustrations do you have for that book?
I believe there will be about 130 full page illustrations, which is about 2 years of full time work. I basically have been doing two. Try to it's just been for a while I was doing two a week, but I've had to slow down quite a bit because of some of these other things that have popped up. But yeah, 130 illustrations. It's I'm hoping it's for me. It's like I used to go to bookstores with my dad when I was a teenager, and I would always want to pick up these like the Art of Hercules or the Art of whatever Disney animation or whatever, and I just love the idea of some person coming across this book that I've created that is clearly a passion project. It's just like, I don't think I've ever seen a book with that much art in it, to be honest, like by one artist. So I'm kind of proud of it. I'm very proud of it. And I'm kind of excited to see how people react to it that have no idea that I even exist. Just like put the book in front of them and just see how if they're as excited about it as I have been for 2 years.
Yeah, I don't know. That's absolutely wild. I mean, yeah, just an absolutely absurd amount of art and creation that you've been doing for that book, and then for the studio as well. So I'll put that link tree up there, and I mean, I know that anybody like me, I'm not saying that I'm in the right mind, but if anybody in their right mind is definitely going to be excited for all of that too. So, wow. Thank you so much for
Appreciate you, Ryan.
your time. That was
Yeah,
a
my pleasure. Yeah,
great
it was
chat.
fun. Always a pleasure, and I appreciate you reaching out and showing interest in my work and giving me an opportunity to talk about it, to expose to new people. So yeah, why don't we let's reconnect in a few months' time. And hopefully there'll be some more exciting stuff to discuss.
Yeah, I'm extremely looking forward to that, and I'm just extremely appreciative of our time today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ryan. And drop me that some recommendations for casual board games as well. I'll be looking forward to that.
Ooh, 100%. Maybe even as a minor treat, I'll put it in the show notes too, so
Oh, yeah.
people will be privy to the that information.
I like that. That's a great idea.
Awesome. Well, thank you again.
Thank you, my friend. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And we'll be in touch.
Perfect.
All right. Take care, Ryan. Thanks, bud.
Intertextual Cardboard Experience, the most mythological podcast about board games and any other text that they connect to. Thank you so much for choosing to spend your time here. Any further support, such as sharing the show with friends, following the page's socials in the episode description, writing a review, filling out the feedback form, or doing anything else you can think of is greatly appreciated. Keep playing, watching, reading, listening, experiencing.